Thank you, Franz. Thank you for coming here. So this is the last one of the series of the papers about various items of Sogdian culture. And again, it is my great honor to present it here at the Collège de France. And as you could notice before, the series was quite eclectic. And this paper will be even more eclectic than the previous ones. And so the scholarly word for this eclecticism is interdisciplinarity. So actually all these papers were to some extent maybe interdisciplinary, and now it is the complete mess. So so what is the our main problem actually in Sogdian studies? That there are two separate branches of it with very little bridges between them. One of them is linguistics, the research of the texts. So here is the picture of Paul Pilieu in the cave in Dunhuang, and another is archaeological research, which shed different lights, the different sides of Sogdian culture, and it is not often easy to put them together. Because apart from the difference in subject, there is also a large difference in the place. So with Sogdian archaeology works mostly about Sogdiana and to less extent the territories of colonization. The very most part of the texts come from Turfan and from Dunhuang and also some other places outside Sogdiana. In Sogdiana there are also some texts, there are Mount Mook documents, but still they are minority. And so the textual work is mostly about Sogdians in exile and archaeological work about Sogdians in homeland in general terms. And these Sogdians who lived abroad in what is called today Xinjiang Uyghur Autonomous Region of China and adjacent areas, they had very the environment there in the first millennium of Common Era was very mixed. So this is the picture I took from the site of Turfan Forschung in Berlin, which indicates how many different languages and different scripts were used altogether on this territory. And in the first of these eclectic essays, I would like to focus on Sogdian material which comes from, well, to say, southern part of the basin of Taklamakan between Kashgar on one side and lowland on the other. So these territories, which are often referred to as Southern Silk Route, so the Southern Path, which was described by Chinese since Han time, is not the main place where the Sogdian texts or other materials were found. But nevertheless, there are many references to these places, and in various texts and visual and images as well, we can find indication of Sogdians living here. So this is not altogether my research, and here in very many instances I'm basing on the scholarship made before by very various scholars, often from the recent times to name only a few, Dziakonova, Mode, Etienne de Levasseur, who is here, Yutaka Yoshida, Nicholas Sims Williams, Ron Sinjan, Bibo, and also many others. Sites to be examined here are underlined, so it is Lulian, then Niya Khotan. The most information will be about Khotan, Tashkurgan, Kashgar, and Tumshuk. These territories, they are lying on the, as you see, on the edge of the Tibetan Plateau. So here is the vast desert of Taklamakan, Maybe at that time it was not as dry as today, but still it was a serious desert. And the streams coming from the mountains irrigated the oasis located at the slopes of these very high mountains. So let's start from the west, from Tashkurgan, so the place where there were paths which were traversed in order to reach Bactria or in order to reach India. And in this mountainous area was called Hepantu, so there are various variants in Chinese sources, and it appears as Harvandan in Sogdian. So the inscription was found in Chilaswali in Upper Indus on one of these rocks, with many inscriptions in various languages and images, mostly Buddhist, and this is the longest inscription there in Sogdian language, about Nanai Vandag, who praise boon of the spirit of some sacred place, that he would arrive to Harvandan quickly and see his brothers in good health. So he had to traverse these very heavy, difficult mountains, which were frightening many people, and the stories about traversing them are legendary till today, so it is probably good to pray before starting to cross Karakorum Desert. Tashkurgan is located still in the mountains. It is the so-called Tajik Autonomous District inside Xinjiang Uyghur area. The Tajiks here are not really Tajiks, so they don't speak Tajik language. Their native languages are Pamiro languages, Fakhis or Ekoli, but still it is very high in the mountains. And when you go from there, from these mountains to the lowland, more or less approximately along the modern Karakorum Highway, you appear to Kashgar, or Shule in Chinese sources, which is unique from many other historical cities in that area, because no text, only a very little piece of Brahmi inscription was ever found in Kashgar, to my knowledge. And some stupas are located nearby the old city with its very spectacular Oriental Bazaar. I know it only from the books. I've never been to that places. And Kashgar indeed is mentioned in the list of nations in Sogdian language, Kashak, native of Kashgar. There was much discussion about Kanjaki, an Iranian, or maybe not Iranian, language of Kashgar, which was used there before Turkic, according to the main Turkic lexicographer, Mahmud al-Kashgari, and according to the latest research in that by late Xavier Tremblay, it seems to be still already the Turkish language, but with inclusion of many Iranian words, some of them of Eastern Iranian origin, similar to Sogdian or Khotanese. If we go lower along the Tarim Basin, we come to Tumshuk, Maralbashi, Buddhist monastery excavated by Paul Pelliot and displayed, this ornamentation is displayed in Musée Guimet. And this place was not only famous as a monastery, but there were also documents found there in the language, in the Tocharian A language, and in the language which is called Tumshukis, which is closely related to Khotanese Sakha, another Middle Iranian language. And among the business documents in this Tumshukis language, the number of the texts is very short. There is certain Sudanas, Sogdians, and one of them has name Yana Rada, which is Sogdian Yan Arad, the boon has come. It's also well known. And now we are jumping to the opposite side of the Tarim Basin, to the very place where the river Tarim extinguished and where the so-called wandering lakes exist, Loulan or Krorina in Indic and Kruran in Sogdian text. It was left quite early after the water was not coming into Krorina. So that places Loulan are mentioned as Kruran in Sogdian ancient letters, and in Chinese letters of slightly later date, we have the name of Sogdians. The governor there in 7th century had a Sogdian surname, and the famous Sogdian prefecture was located there also in the 7th century. Apart from various documents in Chinese and in Indic scripts, there were the fragmented Sogdian documents found at Loulan by Oriel Stein. They are not completely explained, as you see the fragmentary state of these letters, but again, they are must be dated to the early stage of Sogdian language, to not later than 5th century. Historical destinies to Krorina was Nia, the next oasis to the southwest from lowland, from Krorina. Nia, it was also mostly excavated by Oriel Stein, and here is the photo taken from one of his excavations reports. You see the ruins and very many good examples of wood found there. Both Nia and Krorina formed the common kingdom of Chadota in the 3rd and 4th century of common era, from where both in Nia and in Krorai and in Loulan the documents were found in the Kharoshthi script and in Indian language close to what we call Gandhari. So there is a long argument if it was the real language of that territory or maybe it was used just for bureaucratic purposes, but according to the personal names and other references, the language could be different, maybe related to Tocharian. I'm not going deep into that subject, but one of these documents, not the one on the photo it's an example of these documents in Kharoshthi script. It is an Indian script, which ultimately comes back from Aramaic system of writing, but very much modernized. One of these documents from Nia number 82 is a short document about the distribution of camels. So two camels are given to two authorities. One of them is Tomra Apemna. Tomra is his title. And another to the keeper Yapgu, another name. And they are come from two places. One is this Chimgeya Shata, which means Shata is literally 100 and word for village, from Chimga. Chimga is what is Chin in New Persian, for example, it's Chinese. This word is attested. And another village, Vimtsa, is the word for a village, maybe of Khotanese origin and related to Khotanese Bisha of a later time, of Suguta. And I think that this Suguta would mean Sogdians. So it is the village of Sogdians in the Nia territory in the time of these documents. We can approach it slightly closer to its date because the chronology of the kings of Chadota are known, and there is a correspondence, one correspondence of Pepia with Chinese dating, so this chronology can be somewhat longer, somewhat not shorter than what is given here. And so according to the combined short chronology, this Tomra Apemna is found, is attested during the reign of Mahiri. Mahiri, years 13 and 40. So for this 17 years, Apemna was Tomra in Nia. And so these dates correspond with some some variation to the very beginning, to the first 17 years, 15 years of 4th century. So this document about Sogdian village in Nia is almost synchronical to the so-called Sogdian ancient letters, which were composed before 312. And now we are turning to the west of Nia. Nia is somewhere around here, to the largest oasis on the southern side of Taklamakan, the oasis of Khotan, which has very long history, and for many years it was a separate kingdom, and the people there spoke a separate language, a language of Iranian origin, which we call Khotanese or Khotanese Saka. This is there, again, it's taken from the report of Orielstein with indication of archaeological monuments. The ones most interesting for us will be Dandan Uilik and especially Mazar Tag, located on the middle course of Khotan River. One of the very earliest finds from from Khotan is the Karoshchi document number 661, which is a dispute about a camel, it is written in Indian language and in Karoshchi script, so it is earlier than the main text from Khotan, and it mentions the two sides of this conflict. One of them is Suliga, which means Sogdian, Vahitivadaga, which is Vahishtvande, something like this, Sogdian name, slave of gods. And another side has the name Khvarnarse, which could be Sogdian name, but in any case, it is surely Zoroastrian name, son of Narses. Son of Narya Sangha, the sun. We can translate it this. Which indicate that at the time prior to the main cultural flow of Khotan, some Sogdians and some Zoroastrians were living in the oasis. And in this case, the document is not written by the side. Khvarnarsa ordered to write it to Bahudhiva. Bahudhiva is an Indian name, so maybe Bahudhiva could write in Indian language and Khvarnarsa could not, because his name and the name of his opponent indicate that they were, of course, Iranians, and in the latter case, Sogdians. And very many Sogdian texts, not really very many, about 10 of them, have been found at Mazar Tag frontier post. It's its modern view. So you see here the Khotan River. Khotan River goes from the south, from Tibetan plateau, and finally, in some happy times, it reached Tarim in the north. Because most of the year, the lower bed of Khotan River is dry. So from Mazar Tag, the Tibetan post on the already in the desert to the north of the main oasis, several Sogdian texts were found. And only reason to go to Mazar Tag was to cross Taklamakan desert from south to the north. This is the modern highway is going along the Khotan River, and Even before that, crossing usually took place along the Khotan, which was not didn't have such a severe conditions as, for example, Kiria River here, and crossing of Taklamakan along Kiria River is the greatest risk. Apart from this textual evidence, there was long discussion about images of Sogdian gods on Khotanese painting. These wooden tables were found mostly at Dandanuylik, the main sanctuary in Khotan oasis, and they depict, one of them depicts three gods, and according to the study of Markus Mode, and before that Diakonova, and also some other scholars, the most recent is Rongxing Jian, they were explained as images of Sogdian gods. But I don't want to dwell into this item. I can just quote Franz Grenet, who thinks that identifications here are not cannot be established for sure, and Shivaite explanation is also possible. But one of these paintings is I think more Sogdian than anything else. So this is the image also of a god. He is a god because he has a, this mandorla, the, so to say, nimbus around his body, and this gentleman has four arms, unlike the martial gentleman. Yeah. But how much Sogdian is this image in very many respects? His pose, he's sitting cross-legged on a kind of pillow. Everything is richly decorated. His dress, his very luxury and beautiful silks. Look at his pose, the cross-legged, the hands, like the frontal hands of his. And this is the painting from Panjikent, where a gentleman is sitting in completely same pose and very similar dress and with similar attachment of the small dagger and similar shoes and so on. His hat, he is in a pointed hat, what is called kalpak in Turkic or in Russian, which is not very much pointed, but still it has this decoration here. And we have exactly the same type of kalpak on the depiction of Sogdian musicians from China. And also his headdress, his frisure. So his he has quite thin mustache and a beard going quite under his cheeks. Yeah, and here is the image from Panjikent, the king who has a very similar type of beard here. So to say it in general, I don't know which god is depicted here, but I am completely sure that this god is depicted as a Sogdian. He is depicted as god as Sogdian, and maybe even done as by a Sogdian hand. Who knows? And to continue about written texts, in this Khotanese text in Khotanese language and script, it is one of the best examples, but not the one we are speaking about. Many times the word sulia is mentioned, and the scholars are still continuing to argue what is the meaning of this word sulia. Should it mean Sogdian or merchant, or the both things altogether, like Lombard in medieval Europe can mean a Romani lander, not necessarily a native of Lombardia. And apart from this, Yutaka Yoshida recently found out the word Suli Bisha in the village of Sogdians, or in the house of Sogdians, in the one of the documents also from Mazar Tak, which would indicate that this Suli, so maybe a village of merchants, but I think it is more likely to have village of Sogdians there. This word "sulia" appears very many times in Khotani's secular texts. And one of the recent finds from Khotan area is this document. You see, it's written in Hebrew script, but the language here is not Hebrew, but it is early New Persian language. These texts in Hebrew script and in early New Persian are known in various places of Iran. Mostly they are religious texts, the commentaries to the Holy Scripture, but this is the business letter. This early development of Jewish traders is usually associated with the word Ravaniya, which is mentioned by Ibn Khordadbe, has Jewish traders who traded of everywhere from France, from Franks to China, and in Khotan, quite probably. And in these documents, which are only preliminary published by now, in Chinese, there are several references to Sogdians. So one of them, the one part of the letter is long discussion of what happened with the sheep which somewhere went from the village. I read this word as Uzdeh, came from the village, and Sogdian also is acting there. The texts are dated to 801 because there is the mention of a crash of Tibetan forces in Kashgar. And there are many Sogdian personal names. Shvapardar, come forth. Hudinak, Huten in Sogdian, Lady Khashak, maybe Mushak. They are among the addresses of the letter. So we don't know who was the sender, but some of the addresses who were surely the part of these Jewish trading communities have Sogdian names or maybe nicknames. Others have the name Ishak and Rabbi Ben and so on. And there are several Sogdian loan words in these documents. Steri, stater in Sogdian as well as Middle Persian. The word patku is Sogdian patkuk. String is 1,000 Chinese coin. The word patkuk was also found only in the document from Khotan. And the most important here is the word sagd or sagd for day in calculation, seventh day and so on, which corresponds exactly to Sogdian Sakhta, and not so much to Sakht in Middle Persian or Parthian, which is only limited to the Turfan text. So they use some business words which derive from Sogdian into this Jewish New Persian. So these short things show that that Sogdians were present south of Taklamakan. They already settled there in the late 3rd, or likely at least early 4th century of Common Era. They used to penetrate Taklamakan along the Khotan River, where Mazar Tak is located, and they had a significant impact on formation of later Jewish traders. As far as I know, this later point was in detail examined by Yutaka Yoshida in his paper presented in China on the last conference Sogdians in China, but I was not present there, and what I spoke above was reached kind of in an independent way. And now we turn to another item, to the texts. Here we see the marks of the main places where the texts were found. In Turfan and Dunhuang are the main body of the texts, some of from Khotan, of course. There are inscriptions in many places around Eurasia. The most important ones are in the Indus Valley and in the present-day Mongolia. The inscriptions from the Turkic Kagans and many inscriptions were found at Simirichia to the north of Sogdiana. In Sogdiana, the main place of finding is Mount Moog, to the east of Panjikent. We mentioned this name several times during last lectures. And in Sogdiana itself, a number of inscriptions has been found. So the texts vary in their religious affiliation and their identity. So there are Buddhist, Manichaean, Christian texts, all of them almost exclusively in Turfan and Dunhuang, quasi-Zoroastrian to say texts, letters, documents, lists, and what is focused now, our focus now is exercises, which are found both in Turfan, in Dunhuang, and in Sogdiana. These are very small texts which were made by the school children and sometimes by their teachers. And happily to us, these school children were not allowed to write on expensive material, that is, paper or parchment or textile. And very many of these texts were written on ostraka, on potsherds. These potsherds, unlike organic materials, survive very quite good in the conditions of Sogdiana. And so in Panjikent and in other places, we find a number of texts of ostraka written on potsherds, sometimes on bones, with exercises. The exercises are listed here. So there is first exercise was writing alphabet, another was dating formula, letterhead. There were lists. The lists are not found in Sogdiana proper, but in Turfan and Dunhuang. Arithmetic exercises and a kind of examination. Things. Alphabets. Here are two alphabets found in Panjikent, one of them complete from the citadel and another short one from a fragmented one on the bone from temple 2. The bigger one has also the postscript with oath that the student will become a good scribe. This is the place of finding of the bigger one around here, and here is the place where the small one was found. From a stratigraphical point of view, both of them belong to the period before the early 8th century. Apart from that, you see the alphabets were found also in Turfan, one of them is a Neotonic collection, another is in Uyghur language, it is a Turfan Forschung in Berlin. And the last three letters of the alphabet are what is above the normal standard Aramaic sequence. So in Aramaic script, there were always 28 letters, and this did not change. But in Sogdian, there is the repetition of three letters in these cases, P, V, and T, or T, V, and V. And there were various attempts to understand how this, what is the reason for that. So it is considered to be the writing of allophones. So the second T was read not as T, but D. And the second the was written as L, P as B. Probably I don't want to go deeply into this matter because of the shortage of time. At the end, we can discuss it more in a more detailed way. Another exercise was dating formula. You see here two dating formulas from Panjikent. So one of them is 12th year in the 12th month, 12th day of the month, Jimtich, and another of Divashtich. So the ruler of Panjikent appears also here in the text from Panjikent itself, and not only from the documents of Mount Mook, but surely in the context of dating. They were found on the object 26, approximately at this place, on the eastern side of the site. And the Stratigraphically, it also belongs to the early 8th century, to the time of Devastish himself. Sometimes we see examples which are done twice. And at the top, it is the word Al-Kshind, the year when, an Aramaic ideogram is written in good hand and below in the awful hand. This is the example read by the teacher, by the dabir, by the scribe, and here is how the student could copy it. This is a very recent find of the beginning of some word, maybe IXZ, I'm not sure, but also clearly the first one is written better than the lower one. The teacher and the students are writing there. Who was the person in this dating formula? So we have Devastish in Panjakent, and interestingly in Paikent on the western side of Sogdiana, we have this portrait which can be just Kidar, Avt, 7 and maybe years and so on. It did not survive. The word Kidar is very similar in its shape and its writing to Kidar, Kidara on the coins from Samarkand. Kidara was the ruler of Hunnic circle, who was active in Bactria and also in Sogdiana, and Franz Grenet proposed that Kidara was responsible for the new construction, for many new constructions in Sogdiana proper, including the walls of Paikent, which belong more or less to the same time with Kidara. And so this text would lead us to supposition that the date of Kidara is written here. But according to archaeological context, this text is later. It belongs to the early 8th century block from Paikent, I'm sorry, two years ago, a huge hoard of coins, more than 3,000 coins was found there. They are mostly of a unitary issue, of one or two issues, but some are more rare, which indicate that it was concealed around 730s of Common Era. And consequently, this Kidara thing must also belong to the early 8th century. How could it be? Probably the name of the king was kind of frozen in the dating formula, like it was frozen in the case of Bukharan rulers of the coins, Mavak and Asbar, and maybe Kav. Other type of exercise were letterheads. They are found from Turfan, from Merv, to the southwest of Sogdiana on Sasanian territory, and again from Turfan. The letterheads are more or less similar to the dear, the esteemed, the brother, to the Lord, the sovereign, the great expectation, so and so. The word Tuzanku appeared there very often. These are exercises. You see that the exercise from Turfan is written above the Chinese text. So this is the double reusage of text. First it was the Chinese scroll, then on the backside a more sophisticated Sogdian text was written, and then on its backside between Chinese characters the Sogdian letterhead exercise was written. The same letterhead exercises appear also in Panjakent, also in the object 26 from certain Devname. And one of very unusual exercises found in Panjakent is the mixture of various things altogether. You see that it starts with pure Arabic, with Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim, Bismillah Rahman, to the name of God the Merciful, the Gracious. So the pupil first learned to how to write Arabic. Then he turns to Sogdian, and he begins with Atvahu, to the Lord, then probably asked is. And then he turns to the exercise in writing numbers, 100, 10, 20, 10, 20, and so on. So this is a combination of various parts of the education there. Sometimes I didn't mention much of the lists, and maybe the most informative Sogdian text we have today has the title Sakhtnamak, the list of the days. And the text is very good. Sakht Ev, day one. Sakht Avu, day two. Sakht Avri, day three. Sakht Chitvar, day four, and so on. After Sakht Dasa, day 10, the pupil decided to not to write the words or the numbers, but to give them as numbers. Sakht 11 in 10 plus 1, Sakht 12, 10, 1, 1, and so on. It reached the day 23, and that's on. Very informative text. Apart from that, this is one text from Turfan I try to explain as evaluation of a pupil. So this is again written between the lines of the Chinese text, so it is again double reusage of the documents. The name is Titzakchor or Pus Titzakchor. Have learned this divine hymn. Divine hymn is on the different fragment. I will become Vavam, a good and nice scribe, Vapir. Two dots which indicate the end of the clause. Vachsh, the word, the varini, giving word, Vanhanchur. Vanhanchur, another Sogdian name. So he promises to become a very good scribe, and then certain Vanhanchur, probably his teacher, says, I give word for that. I authorize his statement. It is a kind of examination of the mark of the pupil by his teacher. And I am not sure in that, but it looks like the name of the teacher, Vanhanchur, is written in its hand slightly different from the other parts of the text. So it could be that Titzakchor prepared this examination blank, and then Vanhanchur wrote his name there to authorize the statement. And a final one among the pupils' texts in Sogdiana is this one. It is not on the potsherd and not on the paper. It is written on the surface of wall painting, the blue hole. So one of them is very clear, Tuzanku, so and so, and here the pupil knew only the first word of the letterhead, at, the preposition towards, and he wrote it like 10 times. On the other place, it is the first two lines are very easy. Election this year, Zekane, ideogram, Aven, Panchi of Panjakent, Murai, king. The second line is not so clear. So it is a dating formula of the king of Panjakent. What is important here is that the blue hole was constructed in 740s. So this inscription must be a bit later than that. So 750s. And at that moment, they still used the dating of the king of Panjakent. But we know for sure that at that time, at least the real power in Panjakent was in the hand of the was in the hands of the Arabs and no king. So maybe there was some kind of formal nominal king like Yazid ibn Gurak in Ishtikhan, or maybe the dating formula in exercises was just frozen, but in any case, it was used after the fall of Panjikent to Arab hands. And what is, of course, interesting here that the text is located about here and about here on the blue hole, probably the best example of Sogdian wall painting. So what the pupil did is that he destroyed wall painting with his scribbles. A language close to Sogdian used today is Yagnobi language, used in the mountains of Sogdiana. And a part of other elements of other lexical elements, they have the secret language, a kind of language which is not understandable by others. It's like it's like a language game or so on. For example, the word van kama, the one with long neck, used to indicate camel, but now it is used for the word bottle of vodka with long neck, or the word sarsanka, the upper stone of the mill, upper millstone is male, and taksanka, lower millstone, is female. And and one of these words of secret language is ruschak dorna, which was glossed as domulo, the mullah. What is ruschak dorna? Rush is ear, and chak dor is to twitch, to tear. What is domulo? Domulo from one side, of course, is mullah, the religious leader. But in that community, domulo can also mean the teacher. So who is the teacher? The teacher is somebody who tears the ear of the pupil. This is the indication of the way of learning writing and so on in Sogdiana and in Yagnob. And apparently the same method was done with those who wrote their scribbles on the wall paintings. The next question and the next essay is, to combine it with the former one, did the literate Sogdians only destroy the objects of art? Or maybe they could make them. The main art forms of Sogdians, which we know today, is painting. First of all, wall painting. It is sculpture, the relief sculpture in wood, in stucco, in clay, and so on. And of course, metalwork. There is pottery, of course. There is terracotta is a kind of sculpture. There is architecture, but we don't know much about its decorative functions. And so that's what the scholars of Sogdian art operate altogether. But I think another art form is attested in Sogdian. It is Sogdian calligraphy, Sogdian beautiful writing. It's one of the examples of this beautiful writing of so-called sutra script, the script which was used by Sogdians, first of all, by Buddhists, but not only exclusively by them. This is a part from Vimalakirti in Captain London. And this is the name of the beautiful scribe who wrote the Sutra of Condemnation of Intoxicating Drinks, again in preserved today in London. And so it is written by Sarchamikbri, son of Sarchamik, Butyad, Hvisht, the teacher, Dastubari, the manuscript belongs to him on four pages. And here is the colophon. Again, he uses three sizes of script for the main sutra, for his signature, and for the colophon at the end. Here are other examples. The best examples are in Paris, in Bibliothèque Nationale, Vesantara Jataka, Buddhist, non-Buddhist text P3, not so much beautifully written, but still in the same framework. And so the main things are in London and in Paris, but others are in Berlin and in Petersburg. So this is our recent find in storage of Hermitage, the Kochel's Turfan chest, the chest full of manuscripts, which were brought by Oldenburg. It was brought by Oldenburg from Turfan. And at that time, so all the serious texts were given to the Asiatic Museum, the present-day Institute of Oriental Manuscripts. And these very small pieces were just left in this box. There are about 3,000 items there, and 25 of them are in Sogdian, like this one, which is also in not very best example, but still sutra script. It's also Buddhist. It's the text about Buddha Kshetra, the kingdom of Buddha. This is Put Buddha, and this is Akishpu, the land, Buddha Kshetra. So it is our new project to do something with this chest full of Chinese documents, and also some Uyghurs, some Sogdian, some small, very small pieces of silk, and etc. And again, we have to look what was the surrounding of this sutra script. Again, we have the same picture, which indicates the great number of texts of writing traditions in Xinjiang and around it. Is Sogdian script similar to something of them? Not so much. So this is comparison of Sogdian sutra script to Indic, to Kharoshthi, and to Brahmi scripts. Not so common. So Sogdian is different. It's diagonal lines. This modulation of the size of the vites of the line. There are avoidance of this, of angles. Everything is curvy and so on. The same when we compare Sogdian with Chinese. This is an item from Berlin collection from Turfan, very beautiful. The text, the Sogdian transcription of Chinese, and later added by hieroglyphic rendering of the same text. Also very beautiful handwriting. And this is from Turfan chest. Also completely different in means of writing as well. So Chinese, of course, are the best masters of calligraphy altogether, but Sogdian one is different in very many items from the Chinese. First of all, in the instance of writing utensil. Sogdian script is one of Aramaic scripts, and many other derivatives of Aramaic script are found there. So this is this is Manichaean script, also a very beautiful one, but I don't speak much about that. Syriac script, also used for Sogdian in some cases. Middle Persian script and Old Turkic runic script. Maybe Aramaic, maybe not. Not clear. But in any case, it's clear that Sogdian is completely different from the artistic point. Sutra script and other cursive varieties of Sogdian, ancient letters, later texts from Dunhuang and texts from Mount Mook, again, nothing similar in this approach to the digitalization of the letters. Sometimes this script or something similar to it can be found on the best examples of coins from Samarkand, like this coin of Varhuman and Tarhun, and also from Semirechye, like these coins of Turgesh dynasty. Also, these rounding circular lines and special division of the words into the lines and so on. Something similar appears in very few Bactrian fragments. Bactrian is another Iranian language, but the script is not of Aramaic origin, but of Greek origin. And few items in Bactrian scripts were found also in Turfan. They are here. And from some points, I see that it is somehow similar to Sogdian. So these strokes going back and forth and avoidance of the rectangular things and so on, which is somewhat different from also the best examples of cursive script in Bactria proper. So I see here a kind of proportion. So this is Sogdian Sutra script and Sogdian cursive, a good cursive, a good example of cursive script, and Bactrian, yeah, Sutra script, also Buddhist text, and best examples of Bactrian cursive. And of course, the thing which we can have to compare Sogdian in the first instance, it is the Uyghur script. Uyghur is a Turkic language, and their script is development from Sogdian with some modifications. And here we have also a Sogdian text and a Uyghur text. Which one is Sogdian? Here there are these many angles in the letters, so they are all triangular and rectangular and very sharp things. Sogdian is not like this, so everything is curving and no straight lines, no angles, everything flowing like that. Another example, so this is Uyghur with this strict things. This, the script is the same, but handwriting is different. And this is Sogdian, not the best example, but still indicating its rounding shape and so on. For quite strangely, Sutra script resembles more later derivations of Arabic script, used not so much in Arab countries, but in Persia, in Iran, in Central Asia. The Nasta Alik below, it was it formed in 14th century in Iran and Central Asia, and at the top, Sogdian Sutra script. So we see some similarities here in the way how these letters join one another, and these tails to the top and to the bottom, and very important is modulation of the width of the line. Sometimes it's fat and sometimes it's very, 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 very thin. How was it done? It was done because, first of all, because of the writing utensil, the kalam, this piece of wood specially cut so that it can make a thick line and the thin line. And here, usually it is held diagonally in the hand. And this is how I made imitation of this kalam in computer and drew above the letters in one of Sogdian texts and then separated it to the bottom. So we see that in many cases it is similar. So if we just hold the kalam diagonally, we reach a similar depiction of the letters. But in some cases, of course, some other modulations was used, and the scribe could slightly turn kalam in his hand in order to make it more effective. So we are coming to the end of our lecture, and this is also the end of the text. Just to remember that it was actually written vertically and not horizontally, but it's scholarly convention to make it vertical. And so I think that this calligraphy can be put in the similar context with other arts of Sogdian. First of all, because of this dynamic of its curving nature of the line and so on. So I think that Sogdian so-called Sutra script is also one of the products of Sogdian hand. Thank you very much.